Alex here to tell you about the latest show on the Midwest Podcast Network, The Alienist Recap. Each week, we recap the latest episode of TNT's The Alienist, a show adapted from the book by author Caleb Carr. The show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern on Mondays on TNT. Here's Nick with the synopsis of the show.
Set in New York City in 1896, a journalist and an investigative team assembled by Police Commissioner Teddy Roosevelt try to solve a series of murders.
Find new episodes of The Alienist Recap on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and more on the Wednesday after the show airs. We hope you'll join us as we journey into the mind of a killer.
And with me is my beautiful, boisterous, bouncy. I was trying to think of a B word.
That's fair.
Co-host Mr.
Tim Long.
Tim Long.
I am messing with my microphone stand right now.
Yeah, you're having a great time.
You're
like Steven Tyler over here. Kicking that bad boy around. And
tie a bandana.
I'm gonna tie a little bandana around it for you, pal.
You're worthy. Get up.
Ooh.
That's my Steven Tyler impression from Wayne's World.
That was good.
Was that Wayne's World?
God, I don't remember.
Yeah, I think Wayne's World 1 or 2.
I believe it's 2.
Yeah,
it's because Alice is in the first one.
That's right.
Yep. Because he talks about...
Milwaukee.
Yes. Milwaukee. Yeah, that's a great cameo. If you have never listened to us before, we're a show where we talk about horror film, specifically a horror film in a given year.
Yep.
And we kind of talk about that year, the history of the world in that year, what was going on at the time. We kind of try to relate the movie back to the time period. This episode will be the furthest we've gone back, right?
1954. Yes, I think 68 was the furthest before.
So we're breaking our own record here. So we'll be talking about Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window here shortly. But before that, we'd love to hear from you. If this is your first time listening or 31st time listening, by all means, we want to hear from you. We want to know what you want us to talk about. We are always open to suggestions. In the past, we've done everything from covering a specific year of movies to audio commentaries for some of our favorites to doing a series retrospectives of a sort. So we're open to any suggestions.
Totally.
Whether they be new ideas or ideas that fit into any of those categories.
Yeah.
You can send us feedback a few ways. Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook is one way. You can tweet us. We're at HMYearbook on Twitter. You can also send us an email if you got something a little longer you want to mention, questions, comments, concerns. HorrorMovieYearbook@gmail.com is the way to do that. No feedback this week. So let's change that for next week. We haven't been quite as active on social media, I don't think.
Nope.
So we're both very busy.
Yeah.
Normally we love the social media.
We'll kick it up a notch. Oh, let me promote my own stuff. I've been writing stuff.
Please do.
I've been trying to do it on a weekly basis.
Sure.
Newer releases. Just kind of, I hesitate to call them reviews, just like blogging.
Your basically. Thoughts.
Yeah.
Your thoughts.
So yeah. I put one up for a movie we'll probably talk about a little bit, The Ritual.
Sure.
I'm trying to get one, or I got one put up. What are the other ones I did? Before I Wake, Day of the Dead, Bloodline.
Oh boy.
I can't even remember right now. But yeah, check them out. It's right on the website.
Awesome.
Yeah. Trying to do like a weekly class of 2018.
Awesome. Type deal. Awesome. That's horrormovieyearbook.com.
Yes.
Yep. So yeah, check those out. Before we get into our time machine and hop back to 1954, let's talk a little bit about what's going on right now, what we've been watching recently. You mentioned earlier The Ritual, which just hit Netflix, a little over a week ago or so?
Yeah, probably it would have been last Friday. What week are we in?
What year is it?
I think it was two Fridays ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks back.
Yep.
Just kind of like most things on Netflix, just kind of dropped on Netflix and... Looked interesting, and I think we both kind of independently checked it out, right?
Yeah, I had heard
you might have texted me about it.
I had heard a little bit of buzz about it from people that had watched it on Netflix before me.
Mm-hmm.
And some people were comparing it in a lot of ways to The Descent, which
fair
is
comparison.
A movie we have talked about on the podcast and we both really like.
Yep.
So I decided to check it out too. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
The Descent is an apt comparison, but I would probably... There are quite a few movies that it
Blair
seems
Witch
to be,
is the other one.
Blair Witch, maybe a little bit of Kill List. I thought Deliverance was a big one.
Deliverance is there, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Even a little bit of The Witch.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, throw it all in there. Throw it all in a blender.
It's kind of a cocktail.
But the reason I thought Deliverance a little more is because it kind of focuses on a group of male characters going into the woods
yes.
and confronting the elements. And
yes.
other things,
mm-hmm.
Without spoiling too much. I liked it quite a bit. It's slower paced, I guess, but I never felt it. I was always engaged.
It's not in any rush, but I think that's effective in this particular movie because you get a little bit of a lot of a build up into eventually what you find out about. Some of the mysteries that they're dealing with throughout the course of the movie. And it increases the tension, you know, in my opinion. I was tense throughout the movie. I was wondering what was going on. I'm like, what are we dealing with here?
Right.
Is this crazy people? Is it supernatural? Is it, what's going on?
It keeps the mystery until the third act, pretty much.
And pretty close to the end of the film.
Yes, yeah. Pretty close to the end. And then there is a reveal that I won't spoil.
Sure.
That takes it into a different realm, I guess. Different, mm-hmm. Maybe a different subgenre of horror movies.
Sure.
But it works. And it works. I will say the last 10 minutes was probably my least favorite part of the movie because I think it gets a little choppy then in some ways.
There's a bit of a race to the finish line.
It is. And I think some of that might be this is a lower budget movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I was interested the whole time. I liked the characters were interesting. I thought, it was a nice look at kind of in the same way Deliverance of like Four City Boys.
Yeah.
Trying to deal with the elements.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing it has in common with The Descent is that, you know, obviously it's the other side of the coin. We're dealing with an all-male cast this time around, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also dealing with a group of people who have suffered a shared traumatic loss in their lives, which is something that we see in The Descent as well.
Yep.
With, I believe it's Sarah's husband in The Descent. In this, it's one of their friends.
Right.
So that's interesting.
And they both do it as they both go on these trips as a way to kind of prove something or even honor
mm-hmm.
certain things.
It's kind of a closure thing almost.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, no, I really enjoyed this too. There's an aspect of that reveal and that I will say is without trying to give too much away, it's one of the coolest. Looking things I've seen in a horror movie in a long time.
Yeah.
Whoever was in charge of some of the design of this film, I hope they do more in the future.
Yeah.
Because it was really impressive.
I wonder, did they, I could look it up, but I'm not going to right now. Because this is the gentleman who did The Signal, David Bruckner.
The first section. Signal. And he was the actor, the director before Breck Eisner that was signed on to Friday the 13th, I believe.
Oh, really?
I believe he was. Yeah,
okay.
Not that, I mean, everybody's been signed on to that thing at some point. It's like Masters of the Universe. It seems like every director and writer's been attached to it, but no one's actually made it. But yeah.
But he also, he did the first segment of The Signal.
Which is the strongest segment.
I think so, too. Yeah, he did a segment for Southbound, which I have not seen yet.
Okay.
But he also did a segment for VHS.
Yeah.
He did Amateur Night.
Yes.
Which is, I haven't, so he did a movie called Siren. Oh, he did not direct it. Okay. I thought he directed it. Okay. Never mind then. It's based on the creature from VHS, his segment in VHS, which is good. It's like a good segment, but it's one of those segments that, it's like a segment when you rewatch an anthology, you don't skip it, but like
maybe you zone out a little bit.
You zone out a little bit. You're not mad you watched it.
Okay, so it's not the weakest segment, but it's not the strongest.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm interested to see what he does next. I'll follow him. You mm-hmm. know, I would assume that if The Ritual performs well for Netflix, they'll ask him to do something else. I mean, they've done it with Flanagan.
Yeah.
You know, so I wouldn't be shocked to.
It got some, got some solid reviews, got some solid buzz.
And it deserves it. It deserves it.
It's a good movie.
It's not a perfect movie, but I like the cast. I like the setting.
Yeah.
I think it's a unique setting. I mean, yes, they're in the woods. We've seen plenty of movies, horror movies in the woods, but we're in a different geographical region, at least this time around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're in Sweden, I believe.
In Sweden, yes. Which is kind of cool. And, I dug it. I really did.
Me too. I would recommend it as well.
I was a fan. Cool, man. Awesome. And then you also watched, you were brave enough, I was not, to watch the new Hellraiser film.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you.
What is this film called?
What you should watch. This is called Hellraiser Judgment.
Judgment. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Just a heads up, everybody. I'm not going to, there's not much to spoil about the, what is this, the 12th Hellraiser movie?
I'm not going to try and count. There's a lot of them.
How many Hellraiser movies are
there? So we got one, right? Two. We got three Hell on Earth. We got four Bloodlines.
Ooh, Google does not have
We've
good
got
grammar.
Four, or four was...
Nine.
Five was Inferno. Okay.
There are
Thank you for
There are only nine? All right. Is that counting Judgment? Maybe this is pre-Judgment. I don't know. Wait, we got to count. This is great podcasting right now. We're going to count off.
As we stumble through an IMDb.
We're going to count off how many there are. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. There are ten now.
Okay.
Judgment
is
the
10th. Yep. Okay.
Yep. I'm so sorry. So I don't know how much you can spoil the 10th Hellraiser movie, but just a heads up.
If you're concerned about hearing about Hellraiser.
I might slightly spoil the middle. I'm definitely going to spoil the first 10 minutes.
Maybe skip ahead 5 minutes from now.
Yeah. Fair warning.
Yeah.
Hellraiser Judgment. This is kind of based, the pre-credit sequence is crazy. Like it's really out there. It's one of the craziest things I can remember seeing at a Hellraiser, maybe ever. Mm. It's so what has happened. We open and we're in an office, but it's not really in an office. It's technically an office. It's like a bathroom. It's like the bathroom from Saw. Kind of.
Okay.
And there is a bigger guy. He's a child molester or a child murderer.
Okay.
He might be both. And there's Feast, the director of Feast, John Gulager.
Yeah, sure.
He's shirtless in this.
Oh, good.
And he's playing a character called the Assessor.
The Assessor.
The Assessor. So we're introduced to a new, and I wouldn't call him a Cenobite. He's just like a big, he's John Gulager. But kind of like greasy and sweaty.
Oh, okay.
So what he does is he takes out, because he's interrogating a child murderer, he takes out the tears of children. He produces these somehow. The assessor does. The tears of the children, and he pours it on, he has a report in front of him about this man's crimes.
Okay.
And he pours the tears of the children onto this report, and then he shoves it in his mouth. John Gulager shoves the report of the sins he has committed, he douses it in the tears of the children and shoves it in the mouth and eats it. So you think. Then.
So Gulager eats.
Gulager eats the tears of the children soaked.
Okay.
Report on this man's crimes. Then he takes it and he pukes it up. He pukes it into a funnel that is in front of him. I think they're at kind of like a desk. The funnel's on top of a desk.
Okay.
So he pukes it into a funnel. That funnel goes through a series of tubes, I assume, down to a trough. There's a trough in front of these topless women. There are like three topless women, and they all look like they are softcore porn actresses.
Okay,
They have their faces cut off. They have no face.
They have no face,
and they're just sitting there, and they are nude. From the waist up, they're sitting in front of this trough, and the trough starts shooting like the red bile and puke onto them. So what that does, I guess what that does is, so this is why it's called Judgment, because it seems to be titled after the first 10 minutes of the movie. So what that does is they take that information, that puke and that bile, and they form a consensus among them. They are the jury, whether or not he's guilty. So they deem him guilty. They pass the information back up to the head honchos, who is not Pinhead. It's a different guy, I think. And they pass that information back up, and then they bring in who will be doing the punishing, if anybody. And so they bring in this woman. I think it's a woman, but she's in all leather, and her face is done
up. Is she a Cenobite?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. There's probably a name for her, him or her.
Okay.
That I did not write down.
That's fine. I don't need it. It's cool.
She has a gas mask on, too. I think it's the surgeon.
The surgeon. Okay.
Yeah, I cool. think it's the... Or no, it's the butcher. The butcher. The surgeon is a different one. They bring in, I forgot. They bring in another fat guy who's also shirtless. And he's called the surgeon, and he makes like baby noises that follow him around.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So anyway, they bring in the butcher, and the butcher has these arm blades, and she just starts cutting up the child murderer. And that's how it kicks off. And we don't... Like, we see Pinhead at the end of this. Oh, we see him at the beginning, too, because Pinhead seems to be very upset with online pornography at the beginning of this one. It's never really touched on again, but he's just like, people have too much... There's too many sensations for people. People have too much sex and violence thrown at them all the time. Like, my work here is meaningless. Like, I can't shock people anymore, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Pinhead is, like, really bummed out.
He's kind of in a bad mood.
He's kind of in a bad mood. So the first 10 minutes of the movie are fucking nuts. Like, they're crazy. I was in.
It sounds like it.
It didn't make any sense. But I was like, okay, at least we're doing this.
You got my attention.
You got my attention.
I'm not sure that I want to see any of that, but you got my attention for right. sure.
So then it just goes into your typical Hellraiser sequel.
Okay.
Like, it's just like, for a while, it basically rips off the plot of Seven. Again, which I texted you this, and I think this is numerous times now, Hellraiser has ripped off Seven.
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we go into that, and it's really boring and kind of Canadian, and we finally, Pinhead, they just keep cutting the shots of Pinhead, and Pinhead just kind of sits around this whole movie.
This is a Hellraiser sequel, that's about right.
he's not moving at all. He will hold out the, cube.
Yeah,
the lament configuration. He'll hold it out in front of him every once in a while, but that's the most amount of physical activity he gets until the end of the movie.
So we had him on set for like 2 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now I will say we do get to see Heaven in this. There is an angel character in this.
Okay.
Are
they in white leather?
Yeah. Yeah. She's in white leather.
Perfect.
But it's like a white leather like suit coat that is
perfect.
That is low cut and kind of. Shows some midriff too.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
So she is kind of, she seems to be in charge of Pinhead and the crew.
Oh.
So they seem to be kind of controlled. There's an element of like Heaven trying to keep them under control. Heaven needs some balance.
Okay.
Here, so they keep Pinhead around to do his deeds. It's kind of an addition to the mythology that I'm not necessarily crazy about. I kind of like Pinhead more.
Yeah.
Rebelling and doing his own thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they're trying something, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of like Supernatural in a way where we get to see Heaven and Hell. But
yeah,
I don't know how well it fits in the Hellraiser.
Sure. No, I gotcha.
But that's pretty much it. It just kind of goes throughout a really dull detective story. But then it gets kind of crazy at the end again because Pinhead essentially starts a war on Heaven by the end of this.
Okay.
But then I won't spoil the very ending. I've spoiled the entire movie. Basically, here's what I'll say. It's going to hit Netflix soon, as these all do, or some subscription service you're already paying for.
Mm-hmm.
Watch the first 10 minutes. Fast forward to about 28 minutes. Watch those 5 minutes, and then fast forward to the last 10 minutes.
Okay.
And you will have...
nice short film.
You will be able to understand what's going on.
Okay.
Definitely better than Revelations, which is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Probably, honestly, probably middle of the pack, Hellraiser.
Okay. All right. There you go. There you have it.
Yeah.
Hellraiser judgment.
That's our judgment.
Sounds like something else.
You're going to watch it at some point, you know this.
Probably. some random day when I can't figure out what to watch.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it's time to hop in the time machine.
Yeah, we're going to take it way back.
We spent enough time in the present. Can I get a good sound effect from you here for the time machine?
Arrga!
Okay, cool, I like that. Like a hot rod. All right, cool, so we're back in 1954. Let's talk about the year.
Let's do it.
All right, Marilyn Monroe marries baseball player Joe DiMaggio on January 14th.
Who could forget? Oh, I was negative 30, by the way. 1984.
So I was negative, what, 28 then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. The Hudson Motor Car Company merges with Nash Kelvinator Corporation to form American Motors.
Oh, there we go.
Also on January 14th. So two beautiful unions on January 14th. moving on into February 10th, Dwight D. Eisenhower is beginning to warn the country against intervention in Vietnam. We all know where that eventually leads.
Yes.
But we're already getting some of that.
Yeah, we've covered Vietnam quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. First televised boxing fight to be shown in color.
Okay.
On March 19th, my wife's birthday. Kind of fun. Also related, RCA manufactures the first color television set. It's got a 12-inch screen. Care to guess the price in 1954 for a 12-inch color television?
$25.
$1,000.
$1,000. I don't know why I said I was way off.
You were way off. That's okay. That was a lot of money. In April, Bill Haley and his Comets record Rock Around the Clock, starting the rock and roll craze.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is the year of the birth of rock and roll. April 11th, this is considered the most boring day in the 20th century by True Knowledge, which is an engine developed by William Tunstall Pideaux. No significant newsworthy events, births, or deaths are known to have happened on this day. So April 11th, 1954, is the most boring day in history.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, I buy it.
Yeah, why not? April 22nd, Joseph McCarthy begins hearings investigating the United States Army for being soft on communism.
Okay.
Oh, Joe. also, the Boeing 707 is released after about 2 years of development. Brown versus the Board of Education. The U.S. Supreme Court rules unanimously that segregated schools are unconstitutional. Mm. There we go. That's good news. So while old McCarthy's trying to take us back, we're making some strides forward here in other places. June 14th, the words "under God" are added to the United States Pledge of Allegiance. I thought that was there for a lot longer.
Me too.
Not added till 1954.
Interesting. Interesting move that would cause no issues moving forward.
None. Zero. July 19th, we see the release of Elvis Presley's first single by Sun Records. You know what his first single was?
No.
That's All Right.
That's All Right.
I don't know
the song. Familiar with that song. No. My dad's a big Elvis fan. He probably knows it.
He probably knows it. Yeah.
He would also soon be kicking off the rockin'.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If Bill Haley and the Comets started it off, then Elvis would take it to new heights.
He would. He'd be too sexy, too, for a lot of people.
Yeah, lots of hip thrusting. Well, not even thrusting, just kind of moving them back and forth.
Yeah, he would not do much thrusting later on in his career.
No.
He would not do much movement.
Do a lot of eating, mostly. of deep-fried peanut butter and banana sandwiches, apparently. August 16th, the first issue of Sports Illustrated is released.
Okay.
It's kind of fun. Now mostly known for their swimsuit issues, I believe.
I was saying, they have a website. I haven't seen a Sports Illustrated in the wild in a long time.
The only time I ever see it is occasionally they release a Sports Illustrated swimsuit
issue. Yeah.
And it's like if I go into like 7-Eleven to get a pop, they have like a stand with the swimsuit edition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they're almost always full, so I don't think anybody's buying them.
No.
But okay.
well, good for you if you are.
Sure, go nuts.
They're bringing back Fangoria in the future.
That's exciting.
It is kind of exciting.
That's
yeah.
exciting. September 3rd, the last new episode of the Lone Ranger radio program is broadcast. The show had been broadcast over a period of 21 years, and though reruns continued to be transmitted after that point, this was the last brand new episode. There were 2,956 episodes of the Lone Ranger.
That's the radio show?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Pretty awesome, huh?
Binge watch it. Binge listen.
Binge listen. on September 11th, the Miss America pageant is broadcast on television for the first time.
Oh,
hey, gotta watch something on those new color TVs. September 17th, William Golding's novel Lord of the Flies is published in London. My favorite novel of all time.
You love that novel, don't you?
My favorite book of all time. November 3rd is the premiere of Godzilla in Tokyo.
Oh, no.
Not the Blue Oyster Cult song, but that's a good song.
Speaking of the 50s, there's an excellent episode of Mad Men where Don Draper and one of his coworkers get really drunk and go to a Godzilla movie.
They go to see Godzilla.
They go to see Godzilla and they laugh hysterically.
That's awesome. Sounds just like Don Draper. then we go, of course, we have the Red Scare. The U.S. Senate votes 67-22 to condemn Joseph McCarthy for conduct that tends to bring the Senate into dishonor and disrepute.
Joseph.
Yeah.
Take it down.
Yeah, he's not doing so hot at this point. December 4th, huge day in what would become my future life. The first Burger King opens in Miami, Florida.
Oh, yes.
One thing you don't see or hear on this show is that I typically eat a meal of Burger King before we record, which is a wonderful choice.
I'm curious right now if someone has ever put the 1954 Burger King menu online, and I don't see it.
That would be pretty interesting.
Like the original menu.
The original Burger King menu. That would be fun to look at.
Yeah.
I wonder if you can just find like a 1950s Burger King menu. You know what I mean?
Right.
While you're checking that out. Another wonderful.
They only offered burgers, fries, sodas, and a milkshake.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Yeah. They weren't that exciting.
57 was the Whopper.
How much was it for a burger?
It does not say.
Doesn't say? Okay. Mm-mm. All right. You know what else is introduced food-wise that would, I admittedly ate way too much of those, too. The TV dinner is invented.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Any particular TV dinner?
Nope. Just the TV dinner. Invented by American entrepreneur Jerry Thomas.
Okay.
There you go. I ate a lot of kid cuisine back in my day.
I forgot all about that. Dude. Man, those chicken nuggets. Sweet. Those kids, they would get...
Top notch.
I don't know if I'd eat them now.
Nope. They always had a little brownie. Remember they had a little brownie too?
Yeah.
And you might like microwaved it.
It would be like chicken nuggets. You would get a vegetable.
You get like corn.
It would be corn.
And then you get like crinkle fries, which mm-hmm. were all wet.
Yes.
And then you get a brownie, which you had microwaved, so it just started melting like chocolate pudding. Really good stuff. Still sell them.
Do they?
Kid Cuisine, yeah. They're still available.
Are they related to Lean Cuisine?
I don't believe so. Okay. I think they're separate. Okay. But who knows? Maybe they... Everything's owned by like Nestle, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So, it's all owned by like two or three companies.
Or Frito-Lay or whatever, yeah. All right, cool. Music in the 50s.
Okay.
We talked a little bit
about
these.
Yeah, I'll remember these jams.
These are some smooth jams from 1954. Top 10 singles. Hernando's Hideaway by Archie Blair. Mm. number 9 was Secret Love by Doris Day.
Secret Love.
Is that it?
No.
Okay. Number 8 was Three Coins in a Fountain by the Four Aces.
Three coins in a fountain.
Each one seeking happiness.
You know that one.
I do. The only reason I know it is because of Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Okay.
He tries to get the bus to sing along with the song, and they're like, what are you singing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. Number 7, Oh Baby
I Like It
Mine,
Rock.
I Get So Lonely by the I Like It Rock by the Four Knights.
Oh, the Four Knights, yeah, yeah.
Number 6 is Oh My Papa by Eddie Fisher.
I gotta know what that one is.
Yeah, go for it. Pull it up. Number 5 is Make Love to Me by Joe Stafford.
Ooh, whoa, what the
very
hell?
Scandalous for 1954. Number 4 is Shaboom by the Crew Cuts. What a great name for a band.
What a great name for a song.
Shaboom, yeah. Shaboom. Are we listening to Oh Papa?
Oh, my Papa. Well, we got an advertisement right now.
Okay.
We won't name that because they're not a sponsor.
Number 3 is Hey There by Rosemary Clooney.
That's George Clooney's aunt.
Yep.
Or sure. Mom, sorry.
Is it?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh.
What's cool. That? Aunt? Okay. Oh, My Papa. We're listening to it right now. I don't know if people can hear
it's
that.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's about his dad, and it sounds like he's recently passed.
Yeah, it's sad.
So people were really into that in 1950.
Woo! yeah, number 2 is Wanted by Perry Como.
Okay.
And the number 1 song was Little Things Mean a Lot by...
I think I know that one.
Kitty Callan.
Okay.
So, yeah, there you go. Top movies, 1954. Number 10, we have a tie.
Okay.
A Star is Born.
Okay.
And The High and the Mighty.
Don't know that. No, A Star is Born.
Yeah. But I think it's a tie. I don't think that's the same film. but, yeah. Number 9, The Barefoot Contessa.
Okay.
Number 8, The Country Girl.
Okay.
Number 7, Carmen Jones.
The High and the Mighty is a John Wayne movie.
Okay. Cool. Number 7 was Carmen Jones.
Okay.
Number 6 was Vera Cruz. Lots of ladies' names in these films. Number 5, The Caine Mutiny.
Okay.
Number 4, Demetrius and the Gladiators.
Never even heard of that one.
Nope. Number 3, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
I've heard of
Disney,
that
Disney, still killing it back in 54.
it would never stop.
Number 2, White Christmas. And the number 1 film of 1954, raking in a beastly $36,764,313, was our film that we're speaking about today, Rear Window.
Rear Window.
Yep. Paramount had the top two films of 1954.
My dad absolutely loves White Christmas and will watch it every Christmas.
There you go.
And also has George Clooney's aunt and or mom in it. Well, in not and or.
Okay.
Aunt.
Yes.
Yes.
And or.
I do.
Okay.
I realize how stupid
some dark family history in the Clooney family. All right, Rear Window from director Alfred Hitchcock, legendary filmmaker. First time we're talking in great depth about Alfred.
Yeah,
which is pretty exciting. Plot is a wheelchair bound photographer spies on his neighbors from his apartment window and becomes convinced that one of them has committed murder.
That he does.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart is that aforementioned wheelchair bound photographer. Grace Kelly is his lady friend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if their relationship's not, much to her chagrin, their relationship is not truly established in terms of what they are. He's not taking it so seriously.
No, he's a bit of a, he's dragging his feet.
He sure is.
Yeah.
He's dragging his one foot.
Which is odd for him because he's like 25 years older than her.
Yeah, they try their best, I think, to young him up, right?
I think so.
There's definitely an age difference, though.
Yeah, it's noticeable.
It's pretty significant.
It's kind of like every Tom Cruise movie that's been made in the last 10 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, Jimmy Stewart's a charming guy. Not so much in this film. He's playing kind of a jerk in this movie, more so. But anyway, you know, I should mention Raymond Burr is in the film as well.
Lars Arnwald.
Yes, absolutely. Our would-be murderer, right? Our potential killer.
Our suspect.
And Raymond Burr was in Godzilla, the American version of Godzilla.
Yes, he was.
Yes. So just a fun little factoid there. I'm a Godzilla nerd, so, you know, I think we both are. But yeah, Rear Window. I saw this film. I picked this film for...
Yeah, tell us about why you picked it.
Yeah, sure. I picked this film in particular for this episode because I took one and only one college course in film. And it was, I had to meet, you know, a certain requirement, whatever it was, a humanities thing or something.
Right.
And I looked at the course offerings and I was like, well, there we go, film, that sounds right. And the interesting thing about the way that this, and I'm sure it's the same with a lot of professors, but this professor would change up the focus of each semester that he taught. The same class layout remained. You'd watch... mine was Alfred Hitchcock. That's who that was my semester, was Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched Alfred Hitchcock movies all semester. All we had to do was write a paper on 3 of the, like, 12 films we watched.
Right.
You know, Nikki took the same class and got Marlon Brando. So, it was, you know, right now you could probably go take it and it'd be somebody completely different. I thought about just doing it again.
It sounds kind of fun.
It was a cool class. And the guy was really cool. Although... he borrowed my copy of Watchmen and never gave it back.
The book?
The book.
Okay.
So, I don't remember his name, but I'm coming for you.
Is your teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Your professor, I should say? Oh, interesting.
Watchmen was about to come out, and he's like, I've always heard the book is great. I want to read the book. And I said, I have a copy. I'll let you borrow it. And then he never gave it back.
Mm.
So, he's got my copy of Watchmen, and I'm clearly not...
Where was this at? Is that OU?
Oh, this is at Oakland Community College.
OCC? Okay.
Yeah, in Royal Oak.
Okay.
So...
We're not far away from him.
Yeah, we can go track him down.
Go get him.
And get it back.
Yeah.
I'll let that one go. I'm sure he enjoyed it. So I saw this, and I had not been exposed to much Hitchcock at the time. Most of my film expertise, if you even want to call it that, my film knowledge... stems in the 70s and 80s. That's kind of, or I should say that the mid 70s beyond is kind of where my most knowledgeable time period is. And I, you know, when I heard it was Alfred Hitchcock, I'm like, cool, I'm a fan. I've seen Psycho. I like Psycho. I'd seen The Birds at this point. I like The Birds. So, okay, I like what I've seen. And I learned a lot in that class. I learned a lot about Hitchcock, learned a lot about the filmmaking of that period. I learned a lot about his beginnings as more of a mystery thriller director, sometimes even like a government intrigue type thing. He directed a film called like The Saboteur, which was more of a, you know, To Catch a Thief is another one that is more of his early style.
Mm-hmm.
And then he transitioned into horror, which a lot of people didn't think he would be successful in. And Rear Window is certainly leaning more towards that horror element. Not a straight-up horror movie, I would say.
Yeah, this would be referred to, in the time we are in, as an elevated genre.
Okay, sure.
An elevated horror movie.
I mean, it's to me...
It's on that line.
It is. And it, to me, the reason why I determined back then, and upon this viewing, this opinion was strengthened for me, is that this is a horror film because there's a moment in this movie that is scary as shit to me,
okay,
personally. And let me set up why it's scary for me. I think we've all found ourselves kind of fascinated by other people at some point. And by other people, I mean real people, right?
Mm-hmm.
In our day-to-day lives, that maybe we don't know them, but we see them regularly. Could be a neighbor, could be somebody you work with, somebody you went to school with, somebody that you occasionally see walking their dog or whatever. And every once in a while in your life, you find yourself wondering, like, I wonder what that person's all about, right? It's natural to think that. Jimmy Stewart's character takes it to an extreme because, quite frankly, I think he's bored to tears because he's miserable because he's sitting around in this wheelchair waiting for himself to heal up. And he starts to become fascinated with his neighbors, and he starts to almost invent these storylines for them in his head. And mm-hmm. you start to see hints of their lives throughout, and sometimes straight up you're told aspects of their lives. But I think we could all put ourselves in a position like Jimmy Stewart's character. We might not be as obsessive about it as Jimmy Stewart gets, certainly. He's a little extreme with it. But I could see myself. For instance, I suffered secondary burns on both of my feet once.
Yeah.
Yes. From a camping trip gone awry. I didn't put sunscreen on my feet for like 3 days, and it was like 105 degrees out. And I got secondary burns and blisters all over my feet. Anyway.
This sounds like a horror movie.
It was horrible.
Write that.
So I had sun poisoning, legitimately. I was sick. I was throwing up. It was horrible. I had a hard time walking. And so I was kind of bedridden for a few days. I should say I was recliner, like lazy boy ridden for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, I'm like, I'm going to watch a TV show. And I happened to have a copy for some reason of the OC. The television program.
Yeah.
I watched like 3 seasons of the OC.
Yeah.
Like straight. And I became obsessed with it. So I understand how Jimmy Stewart could become obsessed with the drama.
You know, he didn't have shows like the OC back then.
But
either.
If he did, he probably would have watched that.
We probably would have been. But you know what? Things would have worked out differently.
Sure. Absolutely.
The gentleman may have gotten away with it.
Absolutely.
So maybe really what the film is trying to say is that stuff like the OC is a giant distraction.
It might very well be.
From catching criminals.
And if you look at this film, it's really kind of a precursor to reality TV, right? To our obsession with other people and what they're doing in the day.
Yes, reality TV and I think social media.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. But anyway, back to my point. I'm sorry, I keep digressing here, but there's a moment in the film, I'm relating to Jimmy Stewart, I'm understanding personally a situation I've been in where I just, anything I could do to focus on, that could take my mind off my situation, I was focusing on. In his case, it's his neighbors. There's a moment in this film where I can picture myself as Jimmy Stewart, and Grace Kelly's across the way, and she's being arrested by the cops, and she flashes that she has taken the missing wife's wedding ring.
Right.
Which is damning evidence, right, against Raymond Burr's character. What's his name again?
Thorwald, Lars Thorwald.
So good.
Yeah.
Lars Thorwald. And Lars Thorwald sees her gesturing and looks directly at Jimmy Stewart across the way. That shit's scary. That still freaked me out this time.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, he fucking knows where he is. Like, he knows where this guy, he's going to come kill you, dude. Like, that was so scary to me. Because I can imagine, like, looking across the street of like my house and seeing something bad happen and then having like the person who's doing the bad thing like see me seeing them. It's horrifying. It's super scary to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a horror movie for that reason. Okay. Because if it made me afraid.
So this like freaked you out like the first time you saw it?
It freaked me out. Okay. But I mean, up until that point, I was like, okay, it's kind of like a mystery movie, whatever. You know, I'm having a fun time with it. It's well acted. It's well directed. It's interesting. Got a fun little Hitchcock cameo in it. But I got to that point and I was like, oh no, you know, and it's not that long before the end, but it freaked me out. And up until that climax, I was pretty riveted. So, and I will say I was this time too.
This is the first time I've ever seen it.
Wow. Okay, yeah, cool. Sweet.
First time I've ever seen it.
How much Hitchcock have you seen previous?
A decent amount, a fair amount, mainly other than this one, the major ones and a couple of his older.
Psycho, Birds,
yeah,
Vertigo.
I've
probably
seen like Rebecca and
okay. North by Northwest.
Yeah. Is it the 39 Steps?
Yeah.
So I've seen
some of the big,
yeah, the bigger ones and some of the earlier stuff. I'm not an expert.
Yeah, I'm not either. I took a class and I'm not an expert. So
right. I wouldn't call myself an expert, but he's an excellent director. Is that going out on a limb?
No, he is.
To say that he's a good director.
He's pretty good. You're going to go places, kid.
I don't know if I would want to work for him, judging by the stories I've heard. But
yeah, I think the ladies had a harder time probably.
Good point. Him. Maybe I'd be fine.
He had a bit of an obsession with his leading ladies.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is which makes the Jimmy Stewart character very fascinating.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, first time I've ever seen it, but I was completely riveted throughout.
Awesome.
And I kind of figured I would be because I've never disliked an Alfred Hitchcock movie. And no. I never disliked Jimmy Stewart, even when he's being kind of unlikable.
I love Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart is able to pull off this role because he's kind of a dick in this
movie. He is kind of a dick in this movie.
He's a dick.
Yeah. Which is rare for Jimmy Stewart.
It is rare for Jimmy Stewart.
Because Tom Hanks is like the modern Jimmy Stewart, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Like you look at him and you're like, I like that guy.
Yep.
And he's pretty likable in everything he does. But every once in a while, Tom Hanks is a movie where you go, oh, he's kind of a dick in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It surprises you. That's kind of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And, but there is still, a Jimmy Stewartess that shines through in this movie. So where you're still like, oh, he's a lovable.
For sure.
Lovable out. Just get it together, Jim. And I think he does by the end of the movie.
Yeah, the ending's kind of sweet, actually. I kind of like the ending.
It's kind of a sweet. It's sweet in a lot of ways if you can get past the fact that he's kind of mean to his girlfriend.
Well, and I think, real quick, I just want to say, I think that there's a pretty clear, a pretty clearly stated reason for why there's a tension in the relationship and there's an inability for him to move forward with it. And her, really, in a way. She wants to be a part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And his life as a photographer. She goes as far as to say she wants to go with him on some of these excursions. And he explains to her, like, no, you don't want to do this.
They're very dangerous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And
it comes off early like he's lying. But then by the end of it, when he actually puts her in danger, I think he may be lying at the beginning.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, he's like, oh, like, maybe I should settle down here.
Right. Right. And they really, you can tell that they like each other. They clearly enjoy each other's company. But she never feels like she's been able to share something with him. And throughout this experience, she's able to, like, you can tell her excitement and her energy around him changes as they go through this crazy, like, investigation that they're conducting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, there's this moment where I believe it's when she goes across the way, not to go check out she goes to slip the note under the door. And he has this like look on his face, and this he lights up like almost like that's the moment where he's like, okay, I kind of love this girl. Mm-hmm. Like he hadn't seen that side of her before, so it's kind of fun to watch the two of them. Find these reasons to like, okay, now we've got a common ground here.
Right.
Yeah.
No, there is a sweetness. It's very sweet that they find a common ground. They find a common interest in essentially spying on.
It's true. It's true.
But good for them. Kids, they worked it out.
I mean,
they made it.
They took care of business.
But no, one of the things that still holds up and probably will hold up forever because it's human nature is kind of the questions that it asks in this, which basically comes down to, I think we can agree that this is not exactly the work, what Grace Kelly, what Lisa and Jeffries are doing is not exactly ethical.
No, it's not.
It's spying on a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the movie, I think I've seen some people say that it doesn't take a side in the debate on whether it's morally right or morally wrong. I think it almost, it doesn't necessarily take a side, but the ends justify the means, I think, by the end of this movie.
Yeah, they wind up doing a good deed throughout, through their bad deeds, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously that the voyeur aspect of this movie is a huge driving force behind it. You don't have a movie without that.
Oh, it's throughout the movie and the characters talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's like Stella.
Mm-hmm.
She even says
she's great, isn't she?
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's the coolest character in the movie.
Like most people we know named Stella.
Yeah, we have a coworker named Stella. She's super cool too. She made me spaghetti. So,
but she says, like, we've come from a race of peeping toms. What people ought to do is get inside their own house or get outside of their own house and look in for a change. I think it's, first of all, it's a really good line. And she even like says after she says it, she's like, yeah, that was a really good line.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She's so cool.
But I do. I think it's. I just think it's a fascinating movie from that perspective. And I think it's interesting to look at in the age we are in now. We're at the dawn of TV back in 1954, too.
Right.
Which, this is made pre that, so there are other things, too. I'm not an expert on 1954, I should say. I'm not an expert on 1954, but there's a voyeuristic aspect to even watching movies.
Absolutely.
Or watching stories.
Yeah, and it evolved. I mean, and obviously we've become more voyeuristic than ever now, right? It started with actors playing characters on television shows, right? Mm-hmm. It was fictional, but you're still essentially peering through a window into people's lives.
Oh, totally.
And then it evolved into, like I said, we get to a point in the 90s, 2000s with reality TV, where now we're peering into... Mind you, a lot of it's not actual reality, but these are people that are not playing characters. They are themselves, essentially. Maybe mm-hmm. heightened versions of themselves, but they are themselves, and we're watching them interact with other real human beings. And then, like you said, we get to the social media age, and now we're watching our friends,
our
neighbors,
friends,
the people we went to school with.
You're seeing pictures of celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing TMZ style
mm-hmm.
things. You're seeing all sorts of stuff. The other thing this movie touches upon that I think holds up really well is when you get a group of people together fascinated in a subject and they sit there and they talk to each other about it and they come up with ideas and they come up with like what's really going on, trying to uncover a mystery mm-hmm. or maybe sometimes, I mean, they're not even convinced of anything has happened here. And they cook up a story, and it happens to each of the characters that come into Jimmy Stewart. They're so convinced by a story, or they're just so taken along for the ride.
Oh, it becomes groupthink, right?
It becomes a groupthink exercise.
Basically. Even Stella gets into it.
Even Stella gets into it, and she stops herself, and so does the detective, which is another fascinating part of this movie, where Jimmy Stewart and Grace Kelly can do whatever they want. Mm. They are not bound by the ethics that a detective is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that isn't for the better a lot of the times.
Sure.
That a detective has to follow rules.
Oh, absolutely. There's that really interesting moment too where he gets kind of busted by Jimmy Stewart because there's that the pretty woman who's at the end you find out that she's always exercising and stuff in the film and like dancing right. in her apartment and stuff. And at the end you find out that her husband or her boyfriend or whoever was a soldier that was away
right.
at war. Kind of, I love that ending too. I love like how we get to close up all these little tiny loose threads from these characters who aren't even really characters.
No.
I love it.
Like, no, yeah.
Because you start to become as fascinated by these random people that you don't even know their names.
We don't know anything about them except for through the camera lens.
Yeah, exactly, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But there's a moment where the detective finds himself kind of oogling her, mm-hmm. and Jimmy Stewart goes, "How's your wife?" Like, it's really funny, which is awfully judgmental from old Jimmy.
Yeah, right. Back off.
Right, but there's this moment where you can see the detective, who's very hard-nosed on the fact that he's like, "Guys, you need to stop this. This is not the way we do things.
Yeah,
cut it out." Even he was getting pulled into the voyeuristic. You know what I mean? For different reasons.
Yes.
He saw a pretty girl, and he's, you know.
Uh-huh.
But still.
But no, even in the conversation he has with Stewart, there are times when he kind of slips into mm-hmm. speculating
yep.
and speculation. And you don't know that, if it's the first time you watch it, you don't know that Thorwald is guilty until the end of the movie.
Not truly.
Yeah, not truly guilty. You know that some suspicious things have happened, but you don't know that he's guilty. So there's this interesting idea at the core of it where it's, there is a little bit of trial. What's the word I'm looking for? Court of public opinion.
Yeah.
Even kind of.
It's true.
Up until that point, he ends up being guilty. So kind of.
But you literally don't know.
But you do not know going into it. And his job is not to try people in the court of public opinion. It's to try people in actual courts or get them to actual courts. Mm-hmm. So he can't do that. And is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I don't. I mean, it's tough to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good thing, but
yeah, it's it.
The law should follow the law.
Yeah.
Like if you are, it works out this time. But who's to say it would work out in the future?
Sure. No, it's an interesting movie, and I think it has a lot to say.
And I should say there's nothing wrong with trying people in the court of public opinion.
Sure.
If someone does something that is pretty shady, you should say like, oh, that's a shady person.
We're okay to call people out.
Yeah, I don't care.
Just do it. But yeah, no, it's an interesting movie, and it's got, I think it holds up pretty well, considering its age. I mean, it feels relatively timeless, even though it's from 1954. I mean, obviously you can tell it's an older film, but it's nothing in it. There's not a ton of music from the time period in it, really. There's not a ton of, you could see this story happening at any time.
You saw it in 2007 with Disturbia.
Yeah, I was wondering if somebody was going to mention that.
I will always mention Disturbia, both the Rihanna song and
the film?
The Shia movie.
With Rihanna's then-boyfriend, I believe.
Shia was she LaBeouf. Dating? Did she? Was that song on the soundtrack?
Yeah, I believe so.
Jeez.
I think so.
Yeesh.
They were dating at one point.
I don't really like that movie.
No, it's not great.
But I know it has its fans, so I won't.
It's not my thing.
Me neither. There is also the 1980s or the 90s with Christopher Reeve.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's a tricky one to talk about. It was a TV film, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was post accident for Christopher Reeve.
Yes.
And on one hand, I think it's pretty cool that they were remaking this film and said, okay, well, Christopher Reeve might be an interesting choice for the lead role. And if I remember right, he does a pretty darn good job in the lead role. On the flip side, sometimes it feels a little bit exploitive to me. So that's a tricky one. I haven't rewatched that. I might at some point. I don't even know where you can find it. Probably on YouTube, to be honest with you. That stuff is mostly unavailable to purchase anywhere. So, but no, I really enjoyed Rear Window, and I'm happy I watched it again. It's been a little while since I've seen it. It's my favorite Hitchcock film of the films I've seen in his filmography. And I think it's because it is a pretty solid blend of, the horror, side of Hitchcock with a little bit of that, thriller side of Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan. Absolutely. I think anybody who, has an interest in getting into Alfred Hitchcock films, this would not be a bad starting point.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. It might be... I'm trying to think of other possible entry points for somebody who maybe isn't super into Hitchcock at this point. Most of the people listening have probably seen Psycho, but that's not a terribly indicative film when it comes to Hitchcock.
I don't think so either, and I don't think The Birds is either.
No, I think something like this or a North by Northwest
or Vertigo
would probably be your best bets for entry level. You know, I'm not the biggest Vertigo fan for whatever reason. Vertigo didn't quite hit me as hard as I was hoping it was going to, because I know it's got a lot of fans.
Yeah.
And Spellbound's another one that I saw in that class that I remember thinking, just didn't like this one quite as much as his other stuff. But honestly, they're all worth checking out. So, yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome. That's what I got.
Yep. Cool. Awesome. It was fun to go back to 1954.
No, it was.
A long time ago. Well before our time. Yeah. So, as always, want to thank John Morrell for music. I want to thank Greg Long for all of our graphics and all the wonderful stuff he does for us. Shoot us feedback. We've changed up for those who have listened for a while, we have changed up our format a little bit. You've noticed that probably last episode and then this episode. Not too crazy of a change, but let us know what you think. I did have some Rear Window facts.
Oh, perfect.
I meant to get into those, and I don't know how long we're running here.
Oh, we're good. We're good.
Okay, cool. Good. I just want to make sure we had time for that. Yeah, so Alfred Hitchcock worked only in Jeff's apartment. So the set for Jeff's apartment. The actors in other apartments were, they had these earpieces they wore so that he could direct them through the radio, which is kind of fun.
Very nice.
Kind of an interesting, I think it was a smart directing decision, actually.
Yeah.
All the sound in the film is diegetic, which means that all the music, speech, and other sounds all come from within the world of the film.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of orchestral music that is not, that does not fit this, but it's just the first few shots of the film where you hear the orchestral music. The rest of it's all in the world, which is pretty cool. The only film in which Grace Kelly is seen with a cigarette. She refused to smoke in films, except for this one. Interesting. I guess Hitchcock convinced her somehow.
Yeah.
The film was unavailable for decades because of its rights. They were bought back by Alfred Hitchcock and left as part of his legacy to his daughter. They've been known for a long time as the infamous Five Lost Hitchcocks. This was this film and then four other films among film buffs, and were re-released in theaters around 1984 after a 30-year absence. The other films are The Man Who Knew Too Much, also great, Rope, interesting, The Trouble with Harry, never seen that one, and Vertigo. However, prior to the theatrical re-releases in 1980s, Rear Window was televised once in 1971 on ABC, although the network technically did not have the legal right to do so. Interesting. ABC just breaking the law for no reason. the picture was shot on a specially constructed set that took 50 men 2 months to build and cost somewhere between $75,000 and $100,000. You can tell this is a set, but it's a very cool set.
I love this set.
It's super awesome,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is one of those sets that reminds me how much I love sets.
Yes.
Like movie sets.
Yes,
100%. And I love when they're obviously sets.
Sometimes it really works.
Yep.
So, in order to get the scale right, the soundstage floor had to be removed so the courtyard could be built in a former storage space in the basement. Therefore, Stewart's apartment, which appears to be on the second floor, is actually at street level. The set included 31 apartments, of which 12 were fully furnished. The whole thing became a marvel that visitors to the studio were eager to see, and it was featured in magazine spreads while shooting was still in progress. Last little factoid. In 07, the American Film Institute ranked this as the 48th greatest movie of all time. Pretty awesome. It's also in the National Film Registry.
Very nice.
Among many others. Well, not really that many others, but among others, so that it can be kind of safely kept under the watchful eyes of the National Film Registry, I guess.
Yeah.
I assume there's armed guards there or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, glad I got to get those in. I almost forgot to mention those, and there's some fun stuff in there. So
perfect.
But yeah, anyway, yeah, so feedback. Leave us feedback. Twitter at HM Yearbook. Website, the Gmail is horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. Check us out on iTunes, obviously. That's probably how you're listening to us. There are other ways, but iTunes is the most popular, it seems, so check us out there. Leave us a rating and review, please, because it's awesome and it helps other people see our podcast, which is something we want to get more listeners and spread the word is always a good thing. Yeah, that's all I got. Tim, do you know what...
Oh, I do.
Well, you do? Okay. You're always prepared, so I figured as much. What are we looking at for next episode?
I'm going to tell you what we're looking at.
Oh, man.
I wanted to... we've done movies that are important to us. I wanted to do a movie I've never seen before.
Oh.
And one that I've been looking to see
for okay.
a little bit now. It's been a while since we've gone back to the 70s.
70s, okay.
We're going to go back to 1975. This is not a big movie.
Okay.
But I want to... I've heard a little bit about it recently, and I want to check it out. It's on Shudder. So,
okay.
So if anybody wants to watch it, it's called The Devil's Rain.
The Devil's Rain.
Are you familiar?
Rain as in?
R-A-I-N.
Okay.
Let me go over the cast for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Ernest Borgnine.
Like it.
William Shatner. Tom Skerritt.
Okay.
John Travolta in his first movie.
Are you serious?
And one Mr. Anton LaVey.
Anton LaVey,
who was the in charge of the Church of Satan, the founder of the Church of Satan.
Oh, he's in the
film?
He
was a technical advisor on the film and also starred.
What?
So we've got Tom Skerritt, Ernest Borgnine. I got to show you a picture of Ernest Borgnine from the film. He's throwing up the...
Oh, my God. He's throwing the horns up.
He's throwing up the devil horns.
Wow.
This is a movie that I have heard about from a few places recently because they just came out. I think Severin just came out with a DVD of it. It's been called one of the strangest horror movies of all time. It's a cult movie. I have never seen it.
I've never heard of it.
Only 85 minutes long. It's on Shudder. There's a Blu-ray out of it, so feel free to watch along because apparently... I mean, this plot... I'm looking at the plot summary on Wikipedia, and it sounds wild. So, we're going to watch The Devil's Ring.
This looks insane. I'll have to figure out how I'm going to watch this bad lad.
I will hook you up with my account information. Okay. Oh, wait. No, I won't. No, I'll make you pay for Shudder.
Yeah. We'll watch it together.
We'll watch it together. Yeah.
We probably should, actually.
Wow,
a Satanist cult leader is burnt alive by the local church. He vows to come back and haunts down and enslave.
I think it's probably supposed to be hunts.
Hunts down and enslaves every descendant of his congregation by the power of a book of blood contracts in which they sold their souls to the devil. This is...
You see the poster?
Yeah, that's something else.
It's intense, right?
It looks like one of those old disaster film posters, doesn't it?
Yeah, except a disaster.
Oh, my God. Whoa.
And you know who it's directed by? Robert Feust? Director of the Abominable Mr. Fibes.
Last Man on Earth, Into the Darkness.
Good. Yeah. So...
I like that.
That's part of the reason I picked it. The other part is...
I love Dr. Fibes. I still need to watch the sequel completely. I never finished it. This is... Yeah, I'm excited about this.
Yeah, it might be... I've heard that it might be kind of dull, but I can't imagine it being that dull with this cast. But it might be.
All right. Well, I'm going to laugh at it at the very least.
So, 1975. Man, I just glanced at the plot summary, and it's wacky sounding.
I'm excited.
Like, just a random sentence.
I can't wait to dive headfirst into this with my eyes closed. Awesome. Well, it was fun, Tim.
All right.
Thank you all for joining us. We will see you next time for The Devil's Reign.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Bye-bye, man and woman.